I see there's some new faces here, even though I've only been teaching this 1 week. There's some people here just for the first time? Three of you? Okay. Are you here for a class or just on your own? On your own? Well, thank you for coming. Well, whether it was for a class or not. So I just want to clarify before we start that you know that this was a series of five, and this is the fourth out of five, okay? So, of course, what we'll be talking about tonight is building on ideas and thoughts that we've already reviewed in previous classes. So I just want to make sure that you don't get confused about something, and if you do feel confused about anything, ask questions either during the class or come up to me afterward. Okay? Do you all have any background in Buddhism? Nothing at all. Okay. So some of these things might sound a little weird. Okay? Because there's a lot of words in Buddhism that we use that are used very differently in common language, like words like mind, karma, emptiness, things, words like that. You know, we have a preconceived notion of definition, a Webster's definition, in our everyday Western way of defining those things. And if you weren't here with for an explanation of the Buddhist definition of those things, it might sound kind of like, what? Okay? So if that happens, please don't hesitate to ask. Okay? Thank you. Okay, I guess we'll get started. Maybe other people coming a little later, but we'll just go ahead and get started. Again, you see that I am not Venerable Kondo. Unfortunately, although she's doing better, she's still having some health issues and will not be able to complete teaching this class. So I have the pleasure and the privilege of teaching the class for her again tonight and next week. Next week is the last of the five. And I just hope that I can do as good a job as she would have done for you. So we're going to start tonight, as we always do, with setting our intention. It's always important to start any activity with setting an intention. So our intention tonight is that we could have been anywhere else tonight, but we all chose to make the time to create the energy, the effort to come here, to hopefully learn something, get some little nugget that will help our minds be more peaceful, get to know ourselves better, so we can feel like we are a better person to make the world around us a little better place as well. Okay, so my name is Elise Strebel. I am the outreach coordinator here at the Kadampa Center. So if you have any questions or anything after class, you think of something, never hesitate to email me, outreach@kadampacenter.org. Okay? And if you forget this, just go to the website and go to the page where all our management people are, and you'll see me there, and you'll be able to find my email address. Okay. So we're going to start, as we usually do as well, with a review about meditation. Now, what is the purpose of meditation? Why do we do it? Geshe-la says that the ultimate goal is to have a more peaceful mind, to have positive thoughts. That's our ultimate goal. So do we have to meditate? You will find nowhere in the Buddhist philosophy or teachings anywhere, there will be no place that says you have to meditate. But it does say, if you do it, it will help you. Okay? But it's not a requirement at all. You generally find that in the teachings that they say that there's two kinds of meditation, absorption and analytical. But our Geshe-la knows us well, and he broke it down a little bit more for us. And he says there are three kinds: concentration, review, and analytical. So we've already, whether you know it or not, if you've been to previous classes, been working on this first one, the concentration one. And most Westerners, when they think about meditation, they think that it's a condition where you try to sit down and empty your mind. And that is not at all what meditation means in our tradition. Meditation comes from the Tibetan word gom, which means to become familiar with. So we are trying to become familiar with our minds. So with this ultimate goal of creating a more positive mind, what does that mean? It means that first we have to be able to calm ourselves down. We don't have a problem having thoughts. We have too many of them. Our goal is to try to take control of it so we can control what we are thinking so that then we can start studying ourselves. The word gom, to become familiar with ourselves. We want to become familiar with ourselves, with our minds, to be able to start studying our mind and say, well, what agitates my mind? What makes my mind feel calm? And that's how we will ultimately achieve the goal of having a peaceful mind, by identifying what the pollutants in the water are so we can take them out and have a calm, pure thinking mind, right? Okay, so in order to do this, the first step, again, is to calm ourselves down. So there are certain different kinds of meditations that we can do for different purposes. The first is the 7-point meditation posture, which is not really meditation, but it's a way of getting your body in. Welcome, come on in. It's a way of getting your body in a position that it can be comfortable over a long period of time, because when your body is comfortable, your mind can be comfortable. When your body is comfortable, your mind can be flexible, and that's what we really need to have. So start with, oh, by the way, the star, the red stars on those three things, means that you can go online and get a copy of these handouts. Okay, just go to our website, Buddhism in a Nutshell, and so you can have these at home. So the 7-point posture means first you want to be sitting down with your feet either fully supported on the floor. So if you have short legs, like I do when I sit in a chair, put your feet on a cushion so you're not straining. Or you can sit cross-legged like this if it's comfortable to you. Next, you want your back to be nice and straight. Ideally, if you're in a chair, your back would not be touching the back. And in order to do that, you usually need to have your hips raised just a little tiny bit. Because the ideal is to, if you picture your skeleton, if your spine is stacked up nicely like coins, you can ultimately relax all your muscles and your body will support itself. If you're slumped a little bit forward, then your body, gravity will eventually pull it forward. And they say it gives you a tendency to get tired and sleep. And if you're backward, you'll unconsciously feel like you're falling backward and you'll be hyper alert. So you want to try and stack your spine nice. You want your hands to be about belly button level or just below. And in our tradition, we cup the right hand inside the left hand with the thumbs touching. Other traditions, you know, have different, you know, maybe like on each knee or whatever. It doesn't really matter. Whatever is comfortable to you, something that you can sustain comfortably over a period of time. Because we're training our bodies to stay in a comfortable position longer and longer. All right, so, again, like I said last week, when you putting your hands here, you can kind of think of it as forming a basket to receive the teachings. Thumbs together, the jewel of knowledge in your little basket. Your arms should be out a little bit to allow air flow. Right here. your head should be very slightly tilted and in a natural kind of a forward tilt, not too far forward, just a little bit. Your eyes should be softly closed, ideally should let in a little crack of light so you're not tempted to fall asleep. But that's really hard to do at the beginning, so it's okay to lightly close them. And your mouth should be loosely closed with your tongue on the roof of your mouth behind your front teeth, and that's to keep your mouth moist. Okay, so then once you're in a comfortable position, the first thing you want to do is to pull yourself into this place. So you do a little body scan. The scanning the body that's in the handout goes from head to toe, but it's more helpful for me to go bottom up. So I start thinking, well, I was just in my car, pulled in the parking lot, walked in, okay, now my body is here. My bottom, my feet are grounded on this seat. Pull going up, my spine is nice and straight. My head's on top of my shoulders. I'm reeling my mind in. And I'm here in this place. I've come here to listen, to learn. Then once you've pulled yourself in, then you want to pull yourself in a little bit more, and you do a counting the breaths. And what you want to do is breathe out, and then breathe in with, on the count of one, and out. Then in on the count of two. Go all the way to 10, and if you lose count, if you start wandering your mind before you get to 10, start over. And when you can get all the way to 10, you've accomplished it. So let's take a moment to do that. Okay, so now that you've brought your mind down, focused on your breath, by the way, the breath is a really good thing to focus on because it's something that is always with you. If it's more helpful to you to start out by looking at a candle flame or a flower or whatever, that's all right to do if that helps you. But really it's good to have train yourself to focus on your breath, because you will find you will have that with you so you can meditate, you can calm yourself down, focus yourself no matter where you are. So suppose you're having one of these days where there's this thought that just will not let you alone. Something happened during the day, somebody cut you off in traffic, or somebody did something to you at work, and you just can't let that thought go. It's just perseverating in your brain, and you want to get rid of it. Here's a meditation called 9-round breathing that Geshe-la suggests to help with that. He says that one of the reason why thoughts get stuck is because our bodies are comprised of 5 chakras, energy centers, with 72,000 channels going throughout our body, just like our circulatory system or our nervous system. It just, the energy is flowing all the time. It cannot be stopped. But the negative thoughts, the negative energy, can plug up one of those channels. And because that channel is plugged up, that's why that thought gets stuck. So what can we do to get it unstuck? He suggests 9-round breathing is a really good technique. And we'll review how we do 9-round breathing. We use the ring fingers of our hands. And we start by using the ring finger of our left hand to block our left nostril. And we'll breathe in through the right one. Turn it up to the other side. Out through the left. And we're going to do that 3 times. Then you take the right hand, ring finger, you're going to block the right nostril, breathe in through the left, onto the other side and out through the right. And we're going to do that 3 times, total of 6. And then breathe in and out both nostrils 3 times. So let's go ahead and do that. Okay, so these, from 7-point posture, scanning the body, counting breaths, 9-round breathing, these are the first steps that you would use to help calm yourself down and to help focus your thinking. Instead of having what the Buddhists call a monkey mind that jumps from one place to another, this can help us focus to quiet that monkey down and give us better control of our thoughts. Why count to 10? Why is that counting a 10 effective? It's because we're all familiar with the idea that when you're angry, you shouldn't say something right away. You should count to 10. It's because it helps to bring you to a neutral place. And when you bring your mind to a neutral place, it's easier to divert it into a positive direction. Instead of going from a scattered, maybe negative mindset right to a positive one, that's really difficult. But if you can bring it down to a neutral spot, it's a little easier to redirect it. Last week somebody asked, how long should you meditate or when should you meditate? Geshe-la suggests that it's best to do it first thing in the morning for most people. Some people find it's really impossible and they get much more benefit other times of the day, and that's fine. But in general, it's better to start your day off by centering yourself. And for how long? It doesn't matter if it's 1 minute, 3 minutes, 5 minutes. He says, start with an amount of time that's comfortable to you. Start with an amount of time that makes you feel good. If you're aiming for 10 minutes and in minute 6 you're getting restless, going, oh my gosh, when's that clicker going to go off? Then you should stop then, because you should feel good and look forward to sitting and meditating the next time. And even if you just start at 3 minutes for 6 months, and then the seventh month you could do 4 minutes, well, heck, that's 4 minutes better than you were doing before, right? And you gradually build on it. And you might find that you have to just spend your whole time just doing counting the breaths or the 9-round breathing to just center yourself. But that's fine, because even that will benefit you greatly. And so being able to center yourself sets you up for the next important phase of meditation. And that's for the review and analysis. Because like we said before, the ultimate goal of meditation is to have a positive mind. And in order to do that, you have to think about, well, what is making us dissatisfied and unhappy? Why are we thinking that we need this? There's always a reason, right? So in order to figure that out, we calm our mind and review some thoughts or ideas that we've learned about and see how that helps us, something that we've studied in class. But Geshe-la says a really good way to start, even without learning about anything about Buddhist philosophies, is to have a list of qualities that you would like to achieve. Start out with one or two things. I'm going to be patient. Write it down. I want to be patient. I want to go to work and not get angry. Or, you know, just one or two things that work for your life. And he says, once you calm yourself down, look at that list and say, that's what I'm going to try today. And that list can be anything that will be something that helps you. So just reviewing your own goals, one or two or three, however many works for you, something that sets you up for success, and don't have goals like, I'm going to be a perfect person today, because that's setting yourself up for failure. Nobody can do that, right? But to have some little lists that you can look at when your mind is calm and say, that's what I'm going to try today. That's a really good thing to review. And then analyze, what can I do to achieve that today? What can I do to be kinder or more patient today, whatever it is that you want to do? What are some of the things that I did yesterday or last week that made me feel, oh, I don't like this feeling, I'm very impatient? What caused me to be impatient? And what could I have done differently? So what can I learn from that to do differently today? And those are the things that are going to slowly, slowly help the positive part of your mind grow and the negative things need to get pushed out. Okay? So that's a little bit about what analytical meditation is. It's that once you've calmed yourself down, to use that focus to improve your mind. If you choose to go on and learn more about the Buddhist philosophy, there are many wonderful teachings that can help you to develop that further and further. And someone who chooses the Buddhist path, whether or not you call yourself a Buddhist or say that's going to be your whole philosophy, that's not even necessary. But there are many, many ideas in the Buddhist philosophy that are totally secular, that can be used for no matter what faith or no faith that you choose to profess. It's all about being a kinder, better person. And that's what Geshe-la says. The world does not need more Buddhists. We need more kind, compassionate people. And the things that we learn here, that's our goal. That's my hope for you, that something that you hear in this class or something around here is something that makes you feel like you can take it and make yourself a kinder, more calm person. Okay. Any questions about meditation? Okay. All right. So our plan for tonight We're going to review a lot of things that we've already talked about in previous classes and expand on them a little bit. We're going to review karma, precious human rebirth, the Buddhist view of death, the 10 non-virtuous actions or ethical behavior, purification, and some important terms and concepts in Buddhism. All right, so karma means action or your energy, the working of cause and effect whereby positive actions produce happiness and negative or non-virtuous actions produce suffering. Okay, now we think of karma as something that we can see on a short-term scale. That's a common idea of it, right? Like instant karma. Okay, if I steal, I'm going to get stolen from. Well, it certainly is possible and often does happen that you see the consequence of actions almost immediately or in very short time, days, weeks, months, or years. Okay? But the Buddhist view of karma is the same kind of action and consequence over lifetimes and continuously from before this life and before that life and before that one and before that one and after this life. But just seeing how it works even in this life can help you to say or think, hey, you know, that's logical, because any natural law of which karma is a natural law, like the natural law of gravity, we can say, yeah, I think that gravity is a true law because I see the effect of it when I drop this ball or I drop anything. It will always fall, and I can prove it right now. I see it right now. And so with a lot of thought and study and experimenting and trial and error, we can conclude that gravity is probably a law even way before we ever knew about it and way after we're ever going to know about it, okay? So that's why the idea of seeing cause and effect in this life and even this idea of the instant karma is helpful to think about in terms of, well, if it's true now, well, how about previous to my time? So, we're going to go into the idea of how this is connected with rebirth in a minute. But just think about karma. I mean, we think of karma as like a static thing, but really, karma is an energy. It's a continuously flowing energy. Just like gravity is not a thing. It's something that's around all the time. It's always working. And the energy of our minds, our positive, our negative thoughts, is always flowing, flows into the next thing and the next thing. And so if your energy is going in a certain direction, if you're thinking something negative, oh, I don't like that person. I don't like that. I'm going to do this bad thing. If your mind keeps rolling in that direction, and unless you do something to change it, it's going to keep going that way and will have negative consequences. So that's why it's important to recognize how important your energy, your thoughts, which are energy, are. So it's important to always be aware of what your thoughts are and try to redirect them in a positive way. So, again, though we think of karma as something that we see on a short time scale, Buddhism sees it as occurring over lifetimes. So, you know, there's this question of why do bad things happen to good people? Or why do good things happen to bad people? It's really hard to explain that if you don't have this idea of a continuous flow of energy. So, for example, we might see someone who's got a lot of money, but they're really nasty people, okay? So, like, how does this really nasty person have the good fortune of getting all this money? Well, the idea of karma, of this flow of energy, cause and effect over lifetimes, and not just this lifetime, we can think, well, maybe in previous lives, he was very, very generous. So that caused him to have some physical wealth in this lifetime. But if he doesn't use that with a generous mind in this lifetime, it's not likely he's going to have the consequence of generosity or wealth in the next lifetime. So it's important to remember that all the positive things that we have in this lifetime, we essentially have earned those things. We have the privileges and the good conditions that we have now because of positive things in past lifetimes. So we need to keep that awareness if we want our next lifetimes to be as good or better. And the energy of the intention is really important. You know, for example, there's a saying, even a dog knows the difference between being kicked or tripped over. Okay? We all, out of ignorance or accident, might do something that has a negative consequence, like pushing someone. Like, there's a difference between saying, get out of my way, with that angry thought, and pushing someone out of their way, versus maybe you're jostled and you accidentally push them. Well, the consequence is the person is pushed, regardless of what your intention was. They're pushed and make it hurt, right? But we all know there really is a difference in what the energy behind the pushing was, right? So if you have this negative mindset, this negative energy, and you pushed with anger, well, what's going to happen after that? Well, that person is probably going to feel the difference in that energy and get angry back at you. Or even if that doesn't happen, you have that anger in your mind and you're just going to want to push somebody else and push someone else and get out of my way. And we all know that that doesn't lead to anything good, especially in ourselves. We don't feel good about it. And then other people react to us badly. So you can see how this karma, negative karma, can build and build and build. Versus if we just accidentally push someone and say, oh, I'm really sorry, you know, that other person will feel differently towards you, right, for having pushed accidentally. But maybe more importantly, in your own mind, you say, oh, I'm going to have to try to be more careful next time. And what caused me to have to push that person, and maybe I could do something differently. So it's like a whole different path, isn't it? Same action, different energy behind it, leads to whole different consequences. And so that's what karma is. It's, we see this kind of action or effect on the short term, but in Buddhism believes that this goes across lifetimes. And again, this is just a theory, okay? This is one way of looking at the world and looking at things. Other faith systems will have different explanations, and they may be just as valid, okay? This is just a different way of thinking about it. And it's important to remember that not only do we not ask you to believe these things, it's almost a requirement in Buddhism that you take these things and think about them and prove them to yourself. In Buddhism, the faith of conviction is essential. Don't believe anything just because somebody told you to. Venerable Rabina, an international teacher that was here recently, he says, when you're a child and your mother tells you not to touch the stove because it's hot, it's appropriate not to touch the stove because your mother told you not to. But if you're an adult and you're still not touching the hot stove because your mother told you not to, that's a problem, right? So in Buddhism, it's the same thing. You know, as you mature, you should understand why is this good or not good. Why am I doing this thing? Why am I thinking this way? What will be the consequence of my thinking this way or acting this way? That's what karma is all about. You know, really studying the cause and effect of things. Just starting with your everyday life. You don't even have to believe in the rebirth and the lifetimes. Just think about how your mindset, your actions, your intentions affect your everyday life, and you will find a great deal of comfort and improvement in that. Okay, so just a quick review here about this mind, rebirth, and karmic connection. The basic principle in Buddhism is everything has a cause. The mind is non-physical, so it can only be produced by something non-physical, and each moment of mind is produced by the previous moment of mind. This continuity of consciousness is the basis for the Buddhist belief in rebirth and karma. So, just to rephrase that, this thought is caused by the previous thought, the previous one, by the previous one, all the way back to when the time of my birth, but that mind came from something else before, and will go to after, just as the physical body, my adult body was once a young adult, was a teenager, a child, a baby, an infant, an embryo, a cell, and then I don't know what it was before that, but it was something, right? Just as afterward, this body is going to get older, die, decompose, become dust and dirt, and who knows what, okay? Everybody's heard we are all stardust, okay? Ultimately, we're all made of this carbon and hydrogen, so what it came from and where it's going to, I don't know, but it was something before, it's going to be something after. That's the physical aspect. The mind also has no beginning and has no end. It's hard for us to imagine no beginning and no end, but how, like the Dalai Lama and the Buddha say, well, if there is a God, who made him? I mean, it's not logical that something just came out of nothing. Now, this is not to dismiss or to say there is no God, okay? There may be. And if anybody has that belief and it's something that helps them, that is perfectly fine, okay? It's just that we don't say there is no God, but what we're saying is, well, we don't have any proof of that yet, but instead of spending all our time and energy trying to determine that, how is that helping our everyday? Let's first focus on what's helping us every day. Then once we're perfect every day, then maybe we could take some time to discuss that, right? Okay. So, next is precious human rebirth. This is a concept that is really, really important in Buddhism, to recognize and appreciate how valuable your life is. And it's really a sad thing that so many people don't feel that they are valuable. This is such an essential idea. It is said, it's a perfect human rebirth is very rare and difficult to obtain. It gives you an ideal balance of leisure and suffering, opportunity and motivation. So suffering can be a good thing because it reminds us of what we need to fix, right? It's the result of past ethical behavior, and it's important to practice ethics in this life to create the cause for a perfect human rebirth in future lives. You know, Geshe-la, our resident teacher, does everybody know who I'm talking about when I say Geshe-la? Okay. We have a resident monk who is really, we are so, so blessed to have this teacher. He has the Geshe degree is achieved after like 30 years of intensive study. Geshe-la has been our resident monk teacher since 1999. In the whole of the United States, there's probably half a dozen or so Buddhist centers that have a Geshe or even a monk as their resident teacher. So we are incredibly privileged to have Geshe Gelick and also another Geshe, Geshe Sangpo. It's like we're probably the only center that has two Geshes who are very highly qualified monks who are here as our resident teachers. If you haven't come on a Sunday morning to hear Geshe-la's teachings, I really would suggest that you come because his Sunday morning teachings are really precious, and he always has a theme of practical tools to help you in your everyday life. What he teaches is very appropriate whether you're not a Buddhist, have no intention of becoming a Buddhist, you just want some tools to help you feel more in control of your mind and your life, or if you've been a practicing Buddhist for 30 years, it's still appropriate. You've been to Sundays, right? Pretty good stuff, huh? You have a question?
Yeah, so do they live in an area?
Yes. Yes, they live here. Yes. Yeah, we're very privileged that the Kadampa Center was founded in 1990 by Dr. Don Brown, and started with just a few people, and as it grew, they asked for a teacher. Of course, he had to work to have the conditions to support the teacher. But yes, we are very, very privileged to have him.
And so the Sunday thing, is that every Sunday?
Every Sunday, the teachings are from 10:30 to noon. Except they're, always look at the calendar, see the last weekend in, is it last weekend in April, there's a special weekend retreat about a meditation. Geshe-la is going to teach all day Saturday, maybe Friday night, is it Friday night, and then all day Saturday and all day Sunday about meditation. So if you're interested in learning more about meditation, that's an excellent opportunity. So that weekend, I don't think there's going to be the routine Sunday morning teaching, but I'm not sure. So I would look at our calendar, but normally, every Sunday morning from 10:30 to noon, Geshe-la does a teaching right here. Yeah. Anybody can come at any time. Okay, so anyway, Geshe-la, we're going back to precious human rebirth. He said that when he first came to the States, because he's a Tibetan who was born in North India. He was a refugee from Tibet, was born in North India. And then when he was 7 years old, he went to the monastery in South India and lived there his whole life until he came to us in 1999 and didn't know any English, wasn't familiar with our culture. So it's really interesting to see the Western, this world through his eyes. It's a very interesting contrast and observations. And one of the observations that he made, he couldn't believe how many people were depressed, thought badly about themselves, didn't think they were important. You know, he said where he was from, even if you had nothing, no education, nothing, you felt your life had value because their basic belief is that just to be born human, to not wake up with claws and have to go hunting just to survive, or, you know, or be an ant in fear of getting squished every day, you know. Just to be born human with a mind that can think, hands that were soft and can be kind, it's such an incredible feat and such a result of good things that we have done in our past lives. We should all wake up every day and just be joyous that we are human and so precious with so many opportunities to do good things because we are good. And he said that, you know, even especially the elderly people, they feel like once they can't work anymore, their lives have no value, they feel dependent. He said that's so, it was so sad to him. He said in Tibet, the old people are grateful that they now, because of their age and infirmity, have the time to just sit down and pray for others. So their life has a lot of value and meaning because they're able to focus instead of doing the cooking, getting out and hauling the wood or whatever, they can sit and pray for others. So no matter, right to their last moment, their life has much value. And if we could develop such a mindset, boy, that would be so wonderful, wouldn't it? It said that, you know, we ask over and over again, what is the meaning of life? You know, why am I here? Well, if you follow this belief, this logic of karma, we are here because we've chosen this. We've earned this. We need to take advantage of it. Okay, this reminds me of quite a few years ago, this whole thought of depression and all. I went to a mind science conference down in Atlanta. You've probably heard that every year, every few years, the Dalai Lama gathers with scientists to discuss the scientific aspects of theories that are incorporated into the Buddhist philosophy. Because he says that if anything about the Buddhist philosophies can be proven to be wrong, then we must stop believing it. Okay? If everything that we believe should be fact, should be able to be proven. Now, there may be some things we haven't proven yet, but if it can be proven to be wrong, then we'll not think that anymore. For example, thousands of years ago, the Buddhists believed that the world was flat. Well, we all know where that went, right? So he says, well, as soon as it's been proven that the world is not flat, we must stop believing that. So there are many things that that the Dalai Lama really wants to know. He really wants the greatest minds that are setting things to gather together and help prove whether these things are right or wrong. And if they're right, let's help people learn them and use them to their advantage. If it's wrong, let's stop it. So the topic of this conference that I went to was depression. And they had all the greatest neurologists and psychologists and psychiatrists and physiologists all presenting their research. And what was really interesting is that essentially they all proved directly or indirectly that the techniques that are used in meditation, and specifically the way that the Tibetan Buddhists meditate on a series of topics. You know, there's what we have, what's called a lamram. It's a graduated path. It's a series of, first you focus on this, then this, then this, and this, and you gradually come to develop the overall ideas. So one essence of what I learned here was, here's what people who are depressed have in common. They have a feeling of unworthiness, that life doesn't matter. They have a feeling that the current state of misery will not end. They're always going to be miserable. And they have a feeling of isolation, a disconnection from others. Now, the most basic Buddhist beliefs that you start learning from this and this and this are exactly counter to that. First, we believe in a precious human life, that life is very, very valuable. Next, we very much believe in impermanence. We're going to talk about that a little bit. But impermanence means that nothing stays the same. Everything is changing. Your whole body, every cell in your body, is different from what it was a few years ago. We might think it looks the same, but it's all different. Nothing stays the same. And we also believe very intensely in interdependence, that everything is connected. Nobody exists, nothing exists in isolation. So you can see why, if somebody would train themselves in meditation on each of these things, that is exactly counter to the depressed person's thoughts, isn't it? And they found that to be very, very helpful in all manner of people, from students to people who were severely depressed. There was an exception. There were very, very, very few people who were so intensely depressed that they needed some kind of medical intervention just to kickstart them out of it. But then this was helpful. But for the majority of their patients, these forms of meditation were very helpful. Sure. Okay, depressed people feel unworthy. Life doesn't matter. They feel like the current state of misery will never end. They feel isolated and disconnected from others. And the three of the basic Buddhist beliefs are that life is precious. Human life is very precious. We believe in impermanence. Nothing stays the same. The most miserable moment will pass. And third, we believe in interdependence, that everybody is connected, that we all need to help and work with one another because we are all connected. Okay. Here's a little cartoon. So the answer to eternal happiness isn't an upgrade. Okay, the Buddhist view of death might sound kind of depressing, but we are encouraged to think about it daily as a motivation to live this life to its fullest potential. Okay, when I'm sure most of you, if not all of you, have at some time like nearly got hit by a car or had some kind of accident and go, oh my God, I could have died. And it kind of like stirs something and you're like, oh my gosh, I could have died. Like, you know, what should I be doing differently? Or maybe I should do something different. Like, what if I did die now? What would happen? So that's the kind of thing. It's not to be morbid, but it's just to remind us that our days here are not limitless and we should use them to our full potential. You know, a little personal note. My parents were killed in an automobile accident quite a few years ago. And after their death, my brother and I went into their house and saw my mom's sweater on the chair. And my brother said they didn't know they weren't coming home. And I think about that a lot. We all assume that when we go out, you know, we're going to go do our thing and we're going to get home. But you know what? That might not be true. We don't know whether we're going to be going home that day. And so thinking about that, say, you know what? We better try our best to enjoy this, do right, do well, be happy, give others happiness every minute, because we don't know if we're not coming home. And this happened, you just look at the newspaper every day, you'll see examples of this. I'll bet nobody in the paper that was a victim of a shooting or an accident or this or that thought that that was going to happen to them that day, that moment. Okay, so here is what, let me read to you these two things from the Dalai Lama. There's nobody with better words than the Dalai Lama. Precious human life, he says, every day, think as you wake up, today I am fortunate to have woken up. I'm alive. I have a precious human life. I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to use all my energies to develop myself, to expand my heart out to others, to achieve enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. I'm going to have kind thoughts toward others. I'm not going to get angry or think badly about others. I'm going to benefit others as much as I can. What a great way to start each day, isn't it? And then, the true meaning of life, he says, we are visitors on this planet. We're here for 90 or 100 years. That's very optimistic, isn't it? At the very most. During that period, we must try to do something good, something useful with our lives. If you contribute to other people's happiness, you will find the true goal, the true meaning of life. These, by the way, are available. You could Google them. They're very popular sayings. In fact, there used to be some bookmarks and cards with these sayings on them. That's where I got this one. Okay, and more about the Buddhist view of death. Here's what the Buddhists believe. Just as surely, the state of your mind at the time of death is critical to a good rebirth. Not knowing when that will happen, it's important to work constantly to achieve a peaceful mind. Consistent with all the Buddhist philosophy, the process of death, both the physical and mind transition, are predictable and knowable. As you advance in your learning and practice, it may be helpful to review the process. And the more you understand, the more control and less fear that you have to make it a better process. It's not unique to Buddhism. Modern science is also supporting it. In 1994, Dr. Sherwin Nuland published How We Die, with a goal to demythologize death. Demythologize death. No longer have it a myth, okay? Making it more familiar and therefore less frightening, so the dying might approach decisions regarding their care with greater knowledge and more reasonable expectations. So, the Buddhist view of death, we know a few things about it. We know that death is certain. We know that the time of death is not certain, that it can happen at any time. So the goal is to the best of our ability to have each moment of our life as positive and peaceful, having our karmic energy going in a positive direction as much as is possible, because whether you're at your moment of death or not, it's going to be helpful to you. And if that time of death is unexpected, if your mind is, your energy is in a positive direction, then at the time of your death, your mind will be peaceful, and with a continuity of mind and rebirth, you're likely to then go into a more positive rebirth. Whereas like at the time of death, you're angry, negative, then if you believe in this logic, your next life will be more negative, more difficult as well. Okay, again, this is a theory, okay? It's a way of looking at things. It's a way that worked better for me than some other kinds of things. It gives us more responsibility, but it also gives us more control. Any questions so far? This is all kind of like out there stuff if it's the first time you've heard it, okay? So, especially if this is the first class you've been to. So, I hope I don't confuse you more. Yes?
A general question. Mm-hmm.
The question was, we were talking about depression, and she wants to know if Buddhism has anything to say about other forms of mental illness, like bipolar and all. I'm truly not an expert in this, okay? But just my general understanding is that whatever state of our minds are in, it's a result of some of the there's some basic negativities like anger, attachment, and all that might have been present, that were probably present in previous lives, that can cause these imbalances, and they can be corrected ultimately, may not be just in this life, okay? But, you know, I'm just kind of broadly, I don't really understand it well, and I really wouldn't want to misinform you. But there are certainly some techniques that no matter what are things that you can use, or anybody with such health, mental or physical health issues can use to improve whatever their status is. Okay? Does that help? Yes. Any other questions? Yes.
Does Buddhism have any theories of where the mind goes in the afterlife, or where it came from in previous life?
Where, as in a place?
Or just...
It's...
all about, I don't know.
The question was, does Buddhism have any theory about where the mind came from and where it goes to? Again, you know, I'm not an expert. I'm just a student myself. But the best that I could answer that is that every moment comes from the previous moment. That moment came from the previous and the previous and the previous. And the next moment comes from this one. And then the next, and the next. So, I don't think that you could say there's any physical place, because again, physical comes from physical, and the mind is non-physical, and it comes from non-physical. So it wouldn't be in a place. As in, we have here in our human bodies, it kind of inhabits this physical form. In this lifetime, they coexist, okay? But I can't imagine that there's a place that the mind comes from. Does that help? It'd be nice to know that, wouldn't it? Okay, so the 10 non-virtuous actions. These connect karma to ethical behavior. What does 10 non-virtuous actions remind you of? We talked about this last week. What does it compare to in most faith systems? The 10 commandments. Okay, but this doesn't say the 10 commandments, does it? Because in Buddhism, there is no command. Okay, Buddhism is stating a natural, how things really exist, the natural order of things. Okay, there's no command in gravity that it will fall. It's just the natural order of things, okay? So in Buddhism, if you do any of these things, any of these non-virtuous actions, you will suffer. They're not saying you're a good person or a bad person. It's not a judgment. We're the ones that put the judgment of good and bad on things. It's just the natural fact. If you kill, if you steal, have sexual misconduct, if you lie, speak harshly, slander, gossip, covet, have ill will, wrong views, you're not going to be a happy person. And the people around you won't be happy. And you're not going to feel relaxed and have peace of mind and a positive outlook. That's just the law. That's just how it is. But if you abstain from killing, if you value life, if you are careful to not take what isn't yours, you know, if you tell the truth, if you use kind words, if you do the opposite of all of these things, you can easily imagine how your life will feel a lot lighter and happier, and how people will trust you, will feel good around you, will want to help you because you're helping them. You're helping them to feel good, right? It's just the natural law. And so, you know, because we are human beings, we're not going to be perfect. If we have any of these qualities in our life, we can't just, it would be nice if we could say, you know what, I'm just never going to gossip again. You know, I've got this terrible habit of gossiping, and, you know, it's not making me very happy. I'm just not going to do it again. Well, it might be kind of hard to do that. You know, we're human beings. But what's important is your intention and your effort. Oops, I slipped. You know, I'm going to try a little harder next time. I'm not going to beat myself up. I know I'm more aware of it, and I'm going to try to eliminate it. And that's what's important. Venerable Rabina tells a story about she used to work with the prisoners a lot. She started this big international program of working with prisoners, and she was telling the story about one of her guys in prison who was a notorious gang leader, and he'd killed lots of guys. And he was telling her that, you know, one day he just got so mad at his cellmate that he grabbed his head and pushed it in the toilet. But he said, but then, Rabina, I pulled it back out. So that was a good start to his intention, because previously he was not aware that, you know, he should be trying to make things a little better. And he probably would have kept the head in the toilet a little too long. But, you know, that was a little step in the right direction. And that little story is just to show us that we're not expected to go from imperfect to perfect immediately. It's nice if you can do it, but just the fact that you're trying, that you have the intention to, you're working on it little bit, that's what really counts. Because if we do our best, we will have many lifetimes to keep working on these things until we don't have these negativities anymore. Yes. Okay, that's a very good question. What does wrong view mean? Well, an example of this in the Buddhist view, okay, a wrong view might be, you know, the gods really need to be pacified, so we're going to kill animals or people to sacrifice because we believe killing is really, really wrong. Okay, so the view that killing is a positive thing would be a wrong view. The view that, you know what, my philosophy is the right way, and anybody who doesn't believe it, we ought to annihilate them. You know, this world would be perfect if we just kill all the people who don't believe in this way or look this way. Pardon? Yeah. Right. So, you know, though that's what my understanding of what is meant by wrong views. That someone can really, really believe in that and think it, you know, it's just really right, but there's some really wrong logic to it. Okay, something that if you hold on to that view, you're not going to be a happy person. If you really believe that you need to kill everyone who doesn't think the way you do, you're not going to be happy. Okay. All right. All right. So, if you are afflicted with one of those negative emotions, this is one technique that we went over briefly last week that you can change it. Okay. So, there are two ways to change the course of karma. Okay, we talked about how if you've got a certain mindset, if you do nothing to change it, if you say you have you feel angry, you're just going to feel angrier and angrier. It's just going to lead to more and more things happening to you. Your mind will just keep going and going in that direction. If you want to change it, there are only two ways to change. That's anger and purification. Anger, a moment of anger, the Geshe-la says, it's, you know, you could be a kind and generous and wonderful person, but if you let anger take you over, somehow that supersedes all those positive things in your mind, don't they? You can imagine a time where, you know, you're just having a wonderful day and you're giving out money, you're doing this all, but somebody cuts you off or bumps into you and you get really angry. You suddenly forget all those kind thoughts, all those nice things that you're doing. He says it's like stirring the mud up from the bottom of the water. It just clouds everything, okay? So, and purification is just the opposite. You know, if you have some, you know, angry thoughts or attachment or jealousies, we can purify them. We can put them back on a positive course by going through these things. At first, regret, which requires thinking about, well, what was that? Where did I go wrong? What was that wrong thought or action? And say, boy, I really regret that I did that. It's different from guilt. Guilt is the feeling that, oh, I did that wrong thing. I'm a bad person. There's nothing I can do to undo it. I'm not worthwhile. You know, I might as well just go sit in the closet. Okay? Can't fix it. Regret just means, hey, you know what? I made that mistake. Let's think, what was it? So that I don't do it again. The second thing, reliance, means to rely on, in order to have this be effective, the order of these things are often changed. Maybe sometimes reliance should be first, because it's the way of thinking. If you believe in cause and effect, then you will believe that this is the right way. You will know that this is the way to remedy things. If you rely on the logic of cause and effect or karma or anything like that, then you will be encouraged to identify what you did or thought wrong, then try to think of a remedy for it. If you lied to somebody, maybe you can go and say, I'm sorry I lied, let me give you the truth. Or if you took from somebody, I'm sorry I took this, I'm giving it back. It's not always possible to actually do the remedy. Maybe that person's long gone, or you have no way of talking to them. But even the intention of it is a good thing. That if you could do it, you would. It really helps your mind change course into the positive direction. And then, of course, the resolve to never do it again. This is this is a very good way to let go of your mistakes in a positive way. You don't have to be a Buddhist or anything. This is appropriate for any or no faith system that you might choose to have. Okay. Any questions about this? It's pretty logical, isn't it? Very much like confession. Now, in many other belief systems that have a deity, this would be replaced by the act of confession, of asking some higher power's forgiveness, right? So this is different in that it relies on yourself, okay? It's in your own life. It doesn't, if you also choose to rely on another power, that would be fine too. But this here gives you a way, a hard way to actually make a change. Okay, some important terms and concepts in Buddhism. But I'm presenting these terms because you'll often hear them around when people are talking about Buddhism. And so I just wanted to introduce them to you with the Buddhist definitions. This thing isn't staying in place very well. Okay, can you hear me? If this thing wanders off, let me know. Okay, interdependence, as we touched on when we're talking about depression, nothing and no sentient being can exist independent of others. And that is so easy to prove, right? Just take the shirt you're wearing. How many people and conditions went together just to have your shirt? You just take, well, I got this at a store. Well, who built the store? Who ordered the shirts? Who had them come in? And where did the store get them? Well, some people had to make the fabric and cut it and sew it and ship it. And where did the people who got the fabric from the farmers who planted the cotton, who harvested it, and, it would go on and on and on. And, it's really, that's a really good thing to just think about when you're feeling down and out. Just think of how your very existence depends on other people, on the farmers, and your family, your parents. You wouldn't be here without them. And we all also come down to another way of thinking about interdependence is we all really affect one another. Just think we've all had the experience of being around somebody who was a really good and happy person, and just being around that person just made you feel really good no matter what mood you're in. And the opposite, you've encountered some people like, oh my gosh, feels evil, feels bad, I really don't want to be around that person. We all exude that energy and we are all affected by that. So we all affect each other in all kinds of ways. So we're all dependent on one another. Impermanence, the moment things and events come into existence, their disintegration has already begun. As soon as you drive that car off the parking lot, it's lost like $2,000 of value, right? Okay. So the minute we're born, we're growing older. Dependent arising. Self and things come into existence in dependence on causes and conditions, their parts, and the mind labeling them. Okay? That nothing comes from nothing. It's very much connected to the interdependence thing. Okay? This is a piece of paper. Did it just like all of a sudden, like one day, poof, it was a piece of paper? No, there are many causes and conditions for this to become a piece of paper, right? I don't know if this was made out of wood, that pulp that was cut down and milled and whatever. Okay. All right. so we don't have much time. Other concepts, love, loving-kindness, the wish that all sentient beings be happy. Compassion, the wish that all sentient beings are free from suffering. And equanimity, having the above wishes for all sentient beings equally. That's the goal, isn't it? That we can feel calm and peaceful about everybody. All right. Wisdom of emptiness. Gosh, we don't really have enough time to go into this one today. This might be something that we might talk about next week. It's getting near the end of the time, 8:20, and this is a big thought. So be sure to come next week for this wonderful coming attraction, right? this is a big bone to chew on. Oops. Here's a little cartoon. There's nothing on. Excellent. Let's watch that. My microphone's getting all wonky here. So it must mean it's time to get to wrap things up. Okay. So we'll remember to review the Wisdom of Emptiness next week. And also, next week, we're going to review some of the key concepts. Next week is the last class, so it's a really good time to, if you have any questions, to bring those questions. We'll try to just do an overview. But one of my favorite parts is I'm going to give you handouts that of some of the basic important Buddhist prayers and quote excerpts and quotes that will help you to review all of the basic Buddhist concepts and are really good tools. They're tools that not only myself, but many people that I know will look at and go, in times of trying to figure things out, you just read this thing and it's like, wow, this is really so helpful. And I will have copies of these for all of you to take with you. Next week, we'll review them in class. So, are there any questions before we close? Okay. So, we always try to end with the dedication of our efforts and of merit. We've all taken the time and had the patience to be here tonight in the hopes of improving our minds. That in itself is a really amazing thing. It's really amazing that you care about yourself and those around you to make the effort after a very busy day to come here to do this. So let's dedicate that all to our own happiness and for that of all around us. And I would just like that everything here at the Gadampa Center is free of charge. We don't charge anything because everything that goes on here is priceless. So if you can help us out to help contribute to the lights being on, the building being open, it would be very appreciated, whatever you can do. Because until Duke Power and the bank mortgage feels the same way we do, that you just pay what you can, we have to ask people to give whatever they can. But if you can't, all you can give is time, little volunteer work, or even just a positive thought, that's all right too. So thank you all so much for being here tonight and for your attention and time. And I hope to see you next week. Thank you so much. Be safe going home.